You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in, everyone, to Locked On Rockets, the only daily podcast covering the NBA's best basketball team. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official flagship. As we chat this Thursday evening, it's the second consecutive off day for the Rockets. They did practice today, but no games between Tuesday night's romp over the Bulls and Friday night's big game at Toyota Center against the Phoenix Suns. Well, I don't know if it's a big game. Potentially, they could clinch the number one seed in the Western Conference. We'll have to wait and see what happens with the Warriors tonight. It might already be clinched for the Rockets by that point, with the magic number now down to one after the latest Golden State loss on Tuesday night. But Kevin Durant is expected to return for the Warriors tonight, home against Milwaukee, so there's probably a decent chance that the Rockets will be able to clinch home court advantage throughout the Western Conference playoffs, including what many see as an inevitable Rockets-Warriors showdown in the conference finals by virtue of winning on their home floor against the Suns tomorrow night. So in the meantime, we're all waiting for that game tip-off. The Rockets did practice today, not too much news other than everyone other than maybe Luke Bamute expected to play tomorrow. Luke has been dealing with tendonitis in his left knee for the past week. Nothing significant, but when you're dealing with an actual injury as opposed to just planned maintenance, you always are going to be a little more cautious. So we'll have to see whether Luke is ready, but if he's not ready Friday, my guess is he is good to go on Sunday in San Antonio. So with the Rockets off today and not a whole heck of a lot of news on the floor, I want to use today's show to look forward, namely to answer some of the questions about the playoff run ahead. We've had plenty of shows in previous weeks about who the Rockets might play in terms of opposing teams, and if you want my thoughts on that, you can certainly go back to our Locked On Rockets archives. We'll probably do an update next week, because right now we're not going to talk too much about opposing teams because there's still such little separation between 4 and 10 in the Western Conference. There are so many potential combinations with almost 2 weeks still left in the regular season. Next week, I think you'll have a much better idea of who is in that 8 seed range and who's in the 4 or 5, which means who you could conceivably play in the first and second rounds for the top seeded Rockets. So today we're not going to talk so much about the opposing players. That's one of the two questions when it comes to the playoffs. What I'm going to discuss is our own players, who Mike D'Antoni may choose to go out there for the Rockets in the playoffs once they open up against whoever the 8th seeded team in the Western Conference is 2 weeks from this weekend. Now, for the most part, the Rockets' playoff rotation is secure. And when you're 61-14 and the best team in the entire NBA by record, that's to be expected. We know James Harden, Chris Paul, Clint Capella, Eric Gordon, Trevor Ariza, Luke Bamute, PJ Tucker, we know what their roles are. It's the end of the bench that gets a little dicier, and also the final closing lineup, what that's going to be, and of course, matchups are always going to play some role, but there's more to it than just matchups, because sometimes there's not going to be a clear advantage to one side or the other, so you're going to have to make a tough decision. So in this show, what we're going to explore is, in my opinion, the three leading themes. We're going to do it in our usual three-point style, but rather than a recap of the game, we're going to look at the three leading themes, which is the final wing spot, Gerald Green versus Joe Johnson, the backup center spot, Ryan Anderson versus Nene, and the final lineup, what closes out games if it's close and late, especially with Eric Gordon playing the way he has on this homestand, and really ever since coming back from the All-Star break, he's been shooting, as I mentioned, almost 50% from the field and above 46% from behind the arc in the 15 games he's played since late February, coming off from that layoff, which also allowed the minor issues he had with his back and his knee to heal up. And when talking about role players, I'm sure some will say, well, why don't you sit James Harden, Chris Paul for even more games? Now, each of those will probably get one more game before the end of the year, still 7 games left, maybe 2 if you factor in that last game in Sacramento on a back-to-back. We'll have to see how the Rockets approach that. But I don't think the question is so much, okay, you want to run Gerald Green, Joe Johnson, Ryan Anderson, Nene out there for as many minutes as you can, so why don't you sit Harden, Capella, whoever it may be. No, the idea is to see how they fit alongside the big pieces. The guys are going to be doing the heavy lifting in the playoffs because that's what's going to determine these decisions for the Rockets. So you want James Harden out there so you can see who plays well with him, or Clint Capella, or whoever it may be. You want to see where the synergies are. For example, earlier this year, we picked up very quickly how well Chris Paul and Ryan Anderson seem to fit together. And with Ryan Anderson off the bench in those minutes that Chris Paul often plays early in the second and fourth quarter, that seems to be a really good fit and is a pro in the Ryan Anderson column. So it's not just a matter of, well, there's these tough decisions, so why don't you play these guys and see what their stat lines are if they all play 30 minutes per night. No, you want to see them in the context of what their roles will be in the playoffs, because that's when that's going to give you the best chance to understand who is going to be most successful in that role. And I'll start with probably the least consequential decision in terms of minutes, but maybe the toughest decision for Mike D'Antoni, and that's Gerald Green and Joe Johnson. And the reason I say it's the least consequential, we heard from Mike D'Antoni after Tuesday's game, the romp over Chicago, that he mentioned in the postgame press conference that the rotation would be shrinking in the postseason. And that's to be expected. The Rockets, when healthy, they've had as much as a 10-man rotation this year, but no one plays 10 guys in the playoffs. I think this year, as deep as the Rockets are, you'll probably see 9 guys get regular minutes. But of those 9, it'll be more like 8.5, in which the final guy in the rotation probably just plays 10 to 12 minutes, just a 5-6 minute run in each half, maybe even a little less than that in the second half, depending on exactly what the score is. And in my opinion, the final wing spot is going to be that guy on this year's team, because there's so much depth between James Harden, Eric Gordon, Trevor Ariza, Luke Bamute, PJ Tucker. There's so much depth at those forward spots. When all of those guys are playing, and especially if you're ramping them up to 35 minutes per game, which is peak usage, especially for the guys like Harden and Paul in the playoffs, there's really not going to be that much time for another wing off the bench in addition to Luke Bamute. And I guess we'll consider Eric Gordon partially backup point guard because the Rockets don't really have one on the depth chart, but he gets some of his minutes at the wing spots as well, so you can throw him in that mix as well. So between Gordon and Bamute already coming off the bench, there's not going to be that many minutes to go around for that one last wing spot. So I would say that's probably your half player, Gerald Green versus Joe Johnson. However, I think it's a very delicate and tough decision for Mike D'Antoni, because my sense is that he wanted Joe Johnson and expected Joe Johnson to win that job after the Rockets got him from Utah via the buyout market. However, I also don't think that Mike is blind to what is happening on the floor. In my opinion, Gerald has been the more consistent difference maker, especially the last couple of weeks. And I thought it was really telling that in the Portland game, which was the last true heavyweight fight the Rockets had, even after Gerald did not play in the first half of that game, he still played 11 minutes in the second half and only hit 1-3. He played 11 minutes, not just because of his shooting and because he happened to be making some shots, which we know he's streaky and can do, but he also made a difference with his speed, his athleticism, his burst. He had a key block in there. No one's ever going to mistake Gerald Green for a great defensive player, a stopper, but he gives you, especially with his speed and athleticism, a dimension that Joe Johnson simply does not have. Now, in that Portland game, what was interesting is that it wasn't just Joe Johnson that he took minutes from. He also took minutes from Ryan Anderson, because in the second half, behind Clint Capella, the Rockets actually went with no backup center. Now, you do have that tuck wagon option, which conceivably could free up a few more minutes for the wings, but you actually had Gerald Green playing more in place of Ryan Anderson than with Joe. So there are going to be situations like that, and it may not always be Gerald versus Joe, but in general, I think you're only going to have one of those wings play consistently. The other is going to be more of a spot option. And of course, some of it's going to come down to matchups. If it's like the Portland setting in which there's so many playmakers, it's an open court transition game, then Gerald Green obviously is the option there. If it's more of a half court grind, and especially if it's one where you need maybe against a slow plotting team like Utah, more creators against a top-notch defense, then Joe Johnson, hashtag ISO Joe, gives you more dimensions there. So to some degree, yes, it's going to depend on matchups. But that's a cop-out, because in many cases, there's not going to be a clear advantage for one or the other. And even if there is, that team may take steps to make that less of a disadvantage for them, or whatever the strength or weakness is. So you're probably going to have tough decisions. So aside from matchups, because that's obvious, that's what I want to go into. And to me, you're at a point now where I don't think Mike D'Antoni expected Gerald Green to be ahead of Joe Johnson on his trust list. But my guess is that barring a big turnaround from Joe over the last couple of weeks of the year, that's where we're at. The fact is, in today's NBA, 3 and D is the expression it is for a reason, because for wing players that are not stars, those are the two biggest qualities in today's NBA. And right now, Gerald is an upgrade on Joe in both of those categories. He's shooting over 36% from three, whereas Joe in Houston is below 29%. And defensively, Gerald just gives you a lot more options, a lot more versatility. We saw it in the Portland game. We also saw in Toronto. Those were two occasions in which Joe Johnson was really exploited on switches by quick guards. Think back to the Fred Van Fleet. I thought that was the defining sequence of that Toronto loss, the only one the Rockets have lost in, what, their last 28 games, I believe, a testament to how phenomenal this team is. But in my opinion, if Gerald is shooting better from three and he's a better defender, I think he's going to get the call ahead of Joe Johnson. Now, we'll see. I think Mike D'Antoni has a lot of years built up with Joe Johnson. There's a high degree of trust there. So if Joe gets hot down the stretch, if he suddenly enters the playoffs shooting closer to 40% from three, or maybe he gets on a hot stretch the way Eric Gordon has of late, then could it change? Yes, because Mike D'Antoni does want to believe in Joe Johnson. I think he expected and wanted Joe to win that role. The reality is that Gerald is. And in some ways, he's doing it in a completely unexpected way. It's not like Gerald has been especially hot from the three-point line of late. He's actually doing it on the defensive end of the floor. And when you look in January, that was when he played a lot of minutes for the Rockets, then seemed to get yanked from the rotation. A lot of it had to do with the fact that if he wasn't making threes, he was a non-factor, and many times a negative, because Gerald's defense was not very good. And there are some reasons for that. He did not, first of all, know the schemes that well. They basically picked him up off the couch in late December. Also, because he'd been on the couch, his NBA conditioning was not there. So between not having full conditioning and not knowing the schemes that well, again, no one's ever going to say that Gerald has the tools to be a dominant defender no matter what. But I think those two factors may have further exaggerated his defensive level of play. And I think that at that point in time, he was a little bit unplayable if he was not making his shots to Mike D'Antoni. Well, that's changed in a big way of late. We're seeing Gerald, he seems more fit. He seems more committed on the defensive end. And as he told me last week, he also knows the schemes a lot better. So between those factors, that's why to me, Gerald, even if he hasn't had that many great shooting games of late, just one of nine in his last time out from three-point range against the Bulls, his defense has picked up. Mike D'Antoni has noticed that. And so as long as Joe is shooting below 30% from three, and it's not just in Houston, he did in Utah as well. Now, there were some extenuating circumstances in Utah with the injuries, particularly to his shooting wrist, so there was reason to give him the benefit of the doubt. But so far, he's played a number of games in Houston, 16, and it has not picked up at all, still below 29%. So unless Joe shows you more from three, I think Mike D'Antoni is probably surprised that Gerald Green is outplaying Joe Johnson the way he is, but the reality, that's where we're at. And so unless the matchup is heavily tilted to Joe, or Joe comes on very strong in the final seven games, my guess is right now it's close. I think Mike D'Antoni could be swayed by a hot or cold stretch to end the year by either of those guys, but my guess is the playoffs started today and the matchup did not heavily tilt one way or the other. I think Gerald gets the call ahead of Joe, and personally, at this point, I think it's well-deserved. Now that's the first battle to watch in our three-part series on what to look forward to over the final, basically 2 weeks of the regular season is what we're doing here, the final seven games, because the Rockets, let's be real, the number one seed, home court throughout the NBA playoffs, it's a formality at this point. In terms of wins and losses, that's not going to be a big deal. And of course, you want players to get healthy in the case of Luke Bamute and stay healthy in the course of everyone else, especially your stars. So knock on wood, do whatever superstition you have to do to do everything besides put the guys in bubble wrap, because you do need them to get minutes and to make sure that their conditioning stays up and that they're in rhythm heading into the postseason. Aside from the obvious factors, the other things to watch, certainly the results from elsewhere around the NBA, and we've discussed that in the past, who the Rockets, in my opinion, will be best suited to draw in the first and second round. We'll discuss that more next week once the playoff picture comes into focus a little bit more. Right now, there's still such little separation from 4 all the way through 10 in the Western Conference. So since we're going to discuss that on an off day next week, I thought this week's off day show would be better served breaking down the individual matchups, what few questions there are for the Rockets heading into the playoffs. I led off by discussing the final wing spot in the rotation, Gerald Green versus Joe Johnson, why I think ultimately right now Gerald would be slightly ahead. Second segment, let's discuss the backup center spot, which is Ryan Anderson versus Nene. And the big change, of course, is that prior to Ryan Anderson going on the shelf with the hip flexor, you do not really see that many minutes from Ryan Anderson at the center spot. Now, you did on occasions, especially if there were injuries, but he was not a consistent player there. Since coming off the shelf, that's where he's been, and I don't think it's coincidental. They made the change when he got hurt the first time before the All-Star break to insert P.J. Tucker into the starting lineup and never look back. And now you have Ryan Anderson not playing minutes at the four spot at all. And I think both those are correlated with, of course, the Rockets being aware of his declining athleticism, the issues with foot speed, and to put him at the five, then you try and mitigate those deficiencies as best you can. The other perk is that when he's coming off the bench, Ryan's rebounding rate is better than it is when he is as a starter. What I've seen, what my eyes are telling me, is that when he plays 20 minutes per game rather than closer to 30, he throws his body around a lot more. He's more active on the glass because he's not worried about getting fatigued. He's living for the moment. He's trying to make every minute count, and he's able to do that when he's only playing 19, 20 minutes per game. And since he's come back, generally every game that he's been active for, he has been your backup center. Now, Nene got minutes Sunday. That was a game that Ryan sat out because it was the second half of back-to-back. Nene also played Tuesday because it was a rest game for Clint Capella. But other than that, you have not seen Nene in his usual backup center role. And the Rockets have not made a commitment that Ryan is that guy, because when asked, they'll say, and there's some truth to this, that they're just trying to get Ryan reps because as a shooter, he needs to get back into a rhythm, and he did miss a lot of time, basically over 2 weeks, with that hip flexor. And so there's some truth in that. However, my guess is that against most teams, it's Ryan Anderson, not Nene, that would be your backup center. There's a couple of reasons. First, Nene is a power player. I do think if the Rockets feel that they need him in a pinch, he does not need minutes the same way Ryan does to stay sharp. I think he'll be ready. And yes, there are some matchups, especially if you draw a team like Oklahoma City with Steven Adams, that are going to tilt towards Nene. You need that power. So as always, it's conditional on matchups. This is not so cut and dry that no matter the matchup, Ryan Anderson is the superior player. However, the reasons that I think it tilts towards Ryan, first, when it's Mike D'Antoni, always err on the side of the shooter. And in this case, Ryan Anderson gives you so much spacing at the five. Also, in terms of presence inside, as I mentioned earlier, when you limit Ryan's minutes, and we're talking about a backup role here, he's not as poor of a rebounder as he is when he's a starter. So in some ways, especially considering that Nene is also a below-the-rim guy, what you think of in terms of what you're giving up going from Nene to Ryan Anderson, it's not as big as you might think when you're talking about bench Ryan Anderson compared to starting Ryan Anderson, because bench Ryan Anderson is a little bit better in terms of his physicality, throwing his body around the rim. So I don't think the drop-off in defense is quite as much as you might think. The other reasons, folks, when Nene has got minutes this year, there has been slippage. I know he was 34 last year. He turned it on in the playoffs. But in the regular season last year, I've watched the film. He was a better player on the defensive end of the floor. He moved his feet better than he is doing this year. I don't think it's related to the groin injury he suffered in the playoffs. I think it's just one of those when you're 34, 35, these things happen. And Ryan Anderson, you look up the stats. As an isolation defender, I know that teams like Portland and New Orleans have tried to exploit him. Well, first off, they would also try to exploit Nene if he were out there on these switches. But the stats show Ryan in isolation defense is not as bad as you would think he is. He's actually been fairly pedestrian this year. Now, just like Gerald Green, no one's going to confuse Ryan Anderson for being a defensive stopper, but he also has not been an enormous liability this year. So when you look at a player in Ryan Anderson that's been surprisingly decent on the defensive end of the floor, not great, but passable, then you look at his spacing. We know how Mike D'Antoni values the shooters, the fact that off the bench he's a better rebounder than you might think, and also how many teams in the top eight in the Western Conference playoff picture are up-tempo, playmaker-oriented. About the only two I can think of that are more of your traditional plotting, and even the Thunder, I wouldn't say are necessarily plotting, but they have more traditional bigs. The two teams that fit that description are Oklahoma City and Utah. Maybe that matchup, although, as I said earlier, there are also certain steps those teams could take to make the lineups they throw out a little more balanced. So you always have to keep an open mind. But unless the matchup is clearly tilted towards power, then my guess is that Ryan Anderson gets the call in the playoffs before Nene, and it's for much the same reason as Gerald Green over Joe. The defensive limitations of Gerald and Ryan, not as much as you might think, and offensively, the playmaking potential is just a lot more with Ryan Anderson than it is with Nene. And Nene is a very valuable and great insurance option. We saw he played well against the Bulls, and we've seen in the playoffs last year, he's capable of turning it up. But my guess is that if there's not a huge matchup that dictates Nene, that right now Ryan would get the call before Nene does. And that leads into the final segment of our three-part preview, looking at the Rockets' potential playoff rotation. And this might be the most important question, which is, who's going to play at the end of the game? Because when we're discussing Ryan Anderson versus Nene and Gerald Green versus Joe Johnson, we're talking about minutes largely in the middle of the game. Late in the first, early in the second quarters, late in the third, early in the fourth. And those are important. Every minute counts. But in the playoffs, especially against upper echelon teams like the Golden State Warriors and Portland Trailblazers, Oklahoma City Thunder, or really almost any team in the Western Conference playoffs is probably going to be capable of challenging you. That's just how good this conference is right now. The debates we've had earlier are more about the minutes in the middle of the game, and yes, those are important. But against better teams, there are going to be games in which, even if you're the better team, they're good enough, they hit a few shots, where they're close going down the stretch, and then all of a sudden it's just going to come down to who makes the most plays in that final 3 or 4 minute closing kick. And as I look at the Rockets' closing lineup, James Harden and Chris Paul, those are obviously 100%. They're going to be playing, barring injury, every single game in the minutes that matter, the last 4 minutes or so. I would also say this year that Trevor Ariza and Clint Capela are close to 90%. Capela, that was not the case last year. There might be occasional matchups when you see the Rockets think about a tuck wagon lineup, but generally, Clint has come so far, not just offensively, but defensively, that he is at that level where he is indispensable as well. I've mentioned this a lot the last couple of weeks, but the Rockets-Portland game last week that felt like just a prize fight, even though Clint was outplayed by Nurkic in that game, and it was one of his more pedestrian lines of the year, I think he had just 5 and 6, Clint came back in for the final 4 minutes, in large part because of how flexible he is defensively, the presence he has around the rim, getting rebounds, and that to me was a huge show of faith that even when Clint wasn't playing that well, he's still so unique in his value that Mike D'Antoni is going to have him out there. With Trevor Ariza, I don't want to say it's 100%, but it's 90%, because unless he's having just a woeful shooting night or someone else is red hot, you need defense, and of your 3-and-D type wings, Trevor Ariza, PJ Tucker, Luke Bamute, Trevor is the most versatile defensively in terms of being able to guard small and big, quick and powerful, whereas Luke and PJ have certain types. Now, Luke is fairly versatile, but I would say Trevor is the most versatile of all. He can cover so many different types. Also, as a shooter, 38% for behind the arc. PJ and Luke, it's not that they're bad shooters. I would argue that Trevor is a little more consistent. So between the consistency of his outside shot and the extreme versatility defensively, I would say Trevor Ariza, unless somebody else is red hot or he's just abnormally cold, Trevor's going to get the call. So that's why I would say the closing lineup, James and Chris, 100%, Trevor and Clint, 90%. The last spot is interesting. You essentially have three candidates, in my opinion, which are PJ Tucker, your starter at the four spot, Eric Gordon, who's your super six man, and Luke Bamute, who comes off the bench. I haven't seen him in the past week because of tendonitis, but is as versatile and good a defender as there is at the wing spot in today's NBA. So you can't really go wrong with any of those options. They all bring different skills to the table. And yes, some of it's just going to depend on matchups, who's hot, yada yada, but that goes without saying. Point of this show, what if it's close? Who gets the edge? And yes, I do think it's going to be between those three guys, because the final spots, look, whoever's playing between Gerald and Joe or Ryan and Nene, there's even the guys who I expect to win those spots, as I said, Gerald and Ryan, there's enough defensive limitations with Ryan athletically, with Gerald in terms of his physique, that unless they are just blistering hot games when they're shooting, you know, 90% from the field, and maybe not even then, those are more end-of-the-bench guys. It's PJ, Luke, and Eric who all bring different skills. With PJ, of course, the bruising physique, it's the corner three. He's so good at picking up more physical guys. He gives you more of a presence down low. With Luke Bamute, it's the extreme versatility. And with Eric Gordon, it's the playmaking potential. And it's Eric, to me, that is the biggest question, which is his offense worthy of the drop in defense. Because conceivably, you could put Eric Gordon out there with James Harden, Chris Paul, make Trevor Ariza your small ball four, Clint Capella at the five, and with Capella at the five to cover up any deficiencies on the glass, it could work. The question is the trade-off, what you lose with Eric on defense, worth the upgrade on offense? And it's worth discussing because Eric has been so great of late. His last time out against the Bulls, 31 points in 26 minutes, 11 of 17 from the field. Since coming back in late February, as I mentioned, the last 15 games, he's shooting almost 50% from the field and 47% from three. These are elite numbers. Now, over the past week, he's done it first without Chris Paul, who sat out three games with a hamstring, and then without James Harden. Now, we're going to see him starting tomorrow against Phoenix with both Harden and Paul, and that's why it's important to gauge these guys in the context of what their roles will be when the playoffs get here. And that, to me, is going to be the storyline to watch. Eric Gordon has been really good lately. Has he been good enough that the Rockets would consider him, even if you have James Harden and Chris Paul also out there down the stretch of a game? My first instinct is to say that while Eric Gordon, of course, will get minutes in the fourth quarter, he won't be a part of that closing lineup that often. Now, maybe if you're trailing and you need more threes, he would be. The reason I lean to it being PJ or Luke, and then, of course, whichever of those, it depends on the exact nature of the matchup. Is it more of a wing player you need picking up, or is it a guy that has a little more strength? But with Eric, the reason I'm a little skeptical, even when he's been really good in the past month, the two heavyweight fights in which Eric Gordon has been really good, Toronto, it goes without saying, if Eric Gordon is not really making his shots, then of course he's not going to be part of your closing lineup because he's not giving you enough offense to offset the defensive limitations between size, wingspan, all of those talent factors. So with Eric, the question is if he's making his shots like he has so often of late, at what point is the offense, the advantage you get on that, enough to offset what you lose on defense? Well, against Boston, Eric was 8 of 13, 7 of 11 from 3, 29 points. He was scintillating in that game. And yet, with 4 minutes left, he was removed for Chris Paul, didn't come back in until the final minute when the Rockets basically needed him just as a free throw decoy, either to make it or just be another shooter on the floor that the Celtics had to account for. Same thing happened in the Portland game last week. Eric was 7 of 14, 18 points in his 33 minutes. But he was removed at the four-minute mark for Chris Paul, and the Rockets went with a more defensive lineup to close the game. Now, if you want to argue on Eric's behalf, you could point out that the Boston game was actually just his second game back after missing so much time with the food poisoning and then the minor back and knee issues. And at the time, he was just a 33% shooter, barely above, from behind the arc for the season. So maybe the trust was not there in the Boston game to the extent that it is now. Also, the Portland game, the Rockets were playing from in front, so maybe if you're in front by 6, 7, 8 points, maybe that makes you lean even more towards the defensive side of the floor because you're playing from a leveraged position. But that, to me, is going to be what to watch. We know what Eric Gordon can do. The question is, will you see him on the floor with those two stars, James and Chris, to close out a game? Is there a point in which Eric Gordon's offense is enough to offset the defensive drop-off that comes from playing Eric and playing smaller as opposed to having Trevor at his regular three spot and then either having PJ Tucker or Luke Bamute as your four? That, to me, is what to watch for over the final seven games of the year. I don't think the Rockets are going to tip their hand regardless, but if there's a close game and the Rockets are going to have some quality opponents next week, Spurs, the Wizards, the Blazers, the Thunder, do the Rockets experiment with a Gordon lineup to close a game if it's close in less 3 or 4 minutes? Or are they secure that they're going to go with 2 3-and-Ds at all times between Luke Bamute, Trevor Ariza, and PJ Tucker? My guess is they lean to that because you have so much offense already between James and Chris at the guard spots, also Clint in the middle and how he can play in that pick-and-roll game, that probably roster balance composition late in a close game, you're better off tilting those other two spots towards defense, and we've heard the Rockets stress defense all year long. But at some point, Eric Gordon might be so good offensively that you just can't ignore it. I think the odds are you're probably going to have some regression from Eric. Certainly, while he's been better than he was to start the year, I don't know if 50%, 47% from three is a sustainable level. But at some point, if it continues, it's just something to watch. Are the Rockets open to the idea, or are they 100% set on playing 2, 3, and D guys along with the obvious of James, Chris, and Clint? That, to me, is what you watch for over these final seven games, and especially next week when you get to the tougher schedule, as we said, the Spurs, the Wizards, the Blazers, the Thunder. It's not so much the games that matter, because the Rockets are locked into the one seed no matter what. It's these final rotation spots, it's the synergies, it's the chemistry, what guys play well with others. That's what matters for the Rockets, not necessarily the wins and losses, but trying to get yourself in the best position for the playoffs as possible. So hopefully, assuming everyone stays healthy, we'll get an opportunity to gauge that over these final seven games. So on that note, I will wrap up. If you want any more content from me, the best place to get it is on Twitter, although spoiler alert, it's opening day in Major League Baseball, so if you follow me today, you're going to see more Astros tweets. Apologies, Rockets are off. I love the Astros. It is what it is. But yeah, I'm on Twitter, at Ben Dubose. Show is on Twitter, at Lockdown Rockets. I've also got an email address, lockdownrockets@gmail.com, a Facebook at facebook.com/lockdownrockets, and a website at lockdownrockets.com. Always, you can interact with us, ask questions for the show, make inquiries about how to become a potential advertiser and benefit from our rapidly growing audience as the only daily podcast covering the NBA's best team. Whatever we can do to make this a better program for you as a fan, as a businessman, whatever it may be, don't hesitate to reach out. We'd love to help you. Anyway, on that note, I will get to watching the Astros, and we'll be talking more basketball tomorrow night when the Rockets finally get back in action Friday night at Toyota Center against the Phoenix Suns. Hope to see a few of you guys out there for the 7 p.m. tip-off. Until then, go Astros, and we'll be talking again tomorrow right here on Locked On Rockets, your home for daily coverage of Houston Rockets basketball.